It's time to talk Mariners baseball.
Holy smokes!
With spring training just around the corner, we're geared up for baseball.
This is at the wall, and it is gone into the bullpen for a two-run homer. Some serious hang time from Nelson Cruz.
It's the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Sports app.
And from the Peoria Sports Complex here in Peoria, Arizona, we move and slide right into the second hour of our first edition of the Cactus League Report. Rick Briz along with Shannon Dreyer, Gary Hill. And I tell you what, enjoy the first hour with manager Scott Service along with the interview with Dee Gordon. We're going to visit with Mike Zunino in just a little while. But first of all, the trivia question. The question was, there are four active players right now in Major League Baseball with 500 or more doubles. Name one. Well, for the answer, let's go to the audio vault. And the 1-2 pitch, breaking ball, swing, and a line drive down the right field line, a fair ball in toward the corner. Here comes double number 500 up with the ball. Bonifacio, the throw in, is cut off by the second baseman, Merrifield. Around to third goes Gene Segura and Robbie Cano. Welcome to the 500 double club. And there it is, Robbie Cano last year, his 500th career double on August the 4th against Kansas City, making him one of only 63 players in Major League history with at least 500 doubles, became the seventh second baseman, his primary position in Major League history, to collect 500 doubles, joining Craig Biggio, Napoleon Lijoway, Charlie Gehringer, Jeff Kent, Rogers Hornsby, and Roberto Alomar. What a milestone for Robbie Cano. So we've got the... I tell you what, the other guys, besides Robbie Cano, active players with 500 more doubles, Albert Pujols, Adrian Beltre, and Miguel Cabrera. And I tell you what, he just goes on and on and on, Shannon and Gary, with big base hits. And last year collected his 300th career home run.
He just gets the job done. And it was fun to watch him show up for camp. And you looked at Robbie and... You know, this is a guy that gives everything he has during the season. It's good to see that he gets the downtime in the off season. Did a little bit of traveling, but he shows up in just tremendous shape, as did Nelson Cruz. Yeah. And just to see these guys continue to do what they do. And, you know, that's why you went and got Robbie. You went and got him so he would be that guy in the middle of your order for a long, long time. And he just keeps on producing.
I'm looking forward to Robbie Cano picking up his second double of the season, which could happen in opening day, because he'll be at 514 when that happens. And given the offseason, 514 doubles should sound pretty familiar, because he'll tie Edgar Martinez on the all-time career doubles list with two more doubles, which it's a remarkable number. Anything over 500 is incredible. But even at this stage of his career, to reach 514 is amazing. And, you know, with all the Hall of Fame talk that we had about Edgar over the offseason, you start to look at Robinson Cano career he's had as a second baseman. To be honest, I think he could walk away today and he's in the Hall of Fame. He's had that kind of career. He has stacked up some pretty incredible numbers, especially as a second baseman. It's amazing.
How about this for Robbie Cano? Last year, with that 300th career home run, he became the 16th player in Major League history to record a career batting average of 300 or better while collecting at least 1,000 runs, 2,000 hits, 500 doubles, 300 home runs, and 1,000 runs batted in. He joins Edgar Martinez, Hank Aaron, George Brett, Miguel Cabrera, Lou Gehrig, Todd Helton, Rogers Hornsby, Chipper Jones, Willie Mays, Stan Musial, Albert Pujols, Manny Ramirez, Babe Ruth, Al Simmons, and Ted Williams. That is Hall of Fame company. Robbie Cano is a Hall of Famer.
It's Hall of Fame company, and what I am hoping and crossing my fingers, if you think about it, Robinson Cano, the last 2 years and the year before that, last 2 years he's dealt with leg injuries. Mm. The year before that he dealt with a sports hernia for a time being.
And hit 330.
He is fully healthy this year, if the high performance and Dr. Lorena Martin are able to help him at all, and when I look at him right now, I think he looks a little bit smaller in the lower body, which I think will help him out as he gets older. If he has any more help than he has had with the legs the last couple of years, those doubles numbers can go up.
Yeah, agreed. And he had 33 last year, 33 the year before, 34 the year before that.
I think there's more there.
I agree.
And his swing is built for extra base hits because he drives the ball the other way into the gap in left center.
And it's strange to look at his line. 150 games last year, and I mean, that's a lot for any major league player, but for Robinson Cano, it's the fewest he's played in since his second year in the big leagues in 2006 when he wasn't really a full-time starter at that point.
Yeah, remember last year he sat out the four-game series in Toronto, then went on the disabled list with the quad
which
issue.
Which never happens.
Yeah, but he wants to play every day. He didn't want to go on the disabled list, but, you know, he's fun to watch. Shannon, Gary, what are you guys looking forward to here in 2018?
Well, this spring, what I'm really looking forward to watching, obviously we talked about D. Gordon and that transition to center field. I mean, if we're going to see it right in front of us, game after game after game, second baseman in center field, let's go, in tough conditions here, but so far so good with him. I'm really interested to see what happens at the top of the rotation. You know, can Felix Hernandez make that adjustment to you know, use what he has? I've said it over and over and over again. I know last year was a struggle with the health, and when he was healthy, you kind of saw, well, the numbers weren't where you would expect him. He doesn't have that fastball, but I think he's still got so many weapons. Yeah. He can just learn to use them right and commit to that. Can he do that right now? And James Paxton, does he grab that ace spot? Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch the both of them.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think those are two huge storylines. There's a couple guys I'll be watching closely along those same lines. Marco Gonzalez is one I'll be watching closely because it feels like they really want to rely on him this season, so it'll be interesting to watch him this spring. And for me, it feels like Mitch Haniger is a guy that can really be an absolute game changer for this lineup. When you look at the flashes of brilliance we saw last year, if he could sustain anything close to that for a full season, I mean, think about how deep this lineup potentially can get.
The only thing that slowed him down was health.
Yes.
You know, he got hit in the face.
Injuries,
he had the finger injury, and then he was dealing with some things even when he was still on the field that slowed him down.
The oblique early in the season, he was on his way to, I think, becoming the American League Rookie of the Year because he had the best WAR in the American League at the end of April when he got hurt. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to Mitch Haniger putting up big numbers this year. If there was a silver lining to last year with all the injuries, Jerry Dipoto and Scott Service and the coaching staff found out that a lot of these young players could play here at this level. Mitch went down and they called up Ben Gamel. I want to see Ben Gamel a full season, you know, put together a year like he did in the second half of the season when he came up. For a while there, Ben Gamel was leading the American League in hitting. So I want to see the young guys take it to the next level. You mentioned Mitch Haniger, Ben Gamel. The other thing I'm excited about is Mike Zunino. Mike Zunino not only turned around the numbers when he went down to Tacoma, but visiting with Mike, you know, here on the Cactus League Report, he said, I was able to find out how to fix things. And from the end of May to the rest of the season last year, Mike Zunino hit .280 with most of his home runs and most of his RBIs. And when a young hitter, and granted, Mariners rushed him 5 years ago to the big leagues. He had 324 at-bats in the minor leagues. He was able to fix it if something was starting to go sideways. So that's what I'm excited to look forward to. And I also want to see the impact that Juan Nicasio will have, you know, in the back end of the bullpen to give Edwin Diaz the ball in the ninth inning. 34 saves last year and, what, 37 save opportunities. So a lot to look forward to this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And the bullpen especially. I mean, there's a lot of live arms down there. They have a chance to really put games away with leads. If they can get leads to the sixth inning, I mean, they have a chance to really play lockdown, which is huge.
And that's what they're building for.
Yeah.
You know, you look at it, I think there's been so much focus on the rotation and perhaps not enough focus on the bullpen. And the bullpen is going to take innings, I believe, and this is by design, that we haven't seen in the past.
Yeah.
And I think a good approach is to look at this as an entire staff right now. Can you get all those innings from the entire staff?
And you got some nice power arms down there in the bullpen. Say, friends, add the Safeco Field Suites to your list of places to check out in 2018. Whether hosting clients and co-workers or family and friends, you and your guests will enjoy Mariners baseball from the comfort of a private suite. This premium seating option includes game tickets, VIP parking, private SkyBridge entry, and a catering credit. For more information, visit mariners.com/premium. Coming up next, a visit with a young man we were just talking about, Mariners catcher Mike Zunino, as the Cactus League Report continues from the Peoria Sports Complex after these messages.
Back to more of The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Welcome back to the Cactus League Report. Great to have you with us here. Gary Hill, Sean Andrea, Rick Riz. And Rick had a chance to sit down with Mike Zanino. Great conversation about last year. Looking forward to this year as well. Here's Rick and Mike.
Visiting with Mariners catcher Mike Zunino. Mike, Sage veteran now, season number six in the big leagues. Can you believe that you got 5 years under your belt? We'll talk about an incredible 2017, but here you are, one of the veterans on this ball club. And what are you looking forward to here in 2018?
I'm just looking forward to playing with this group of guys. It's been very crazy the last couple of years, seeing the turnaround with Jerry. But, you know, it's nice. I feel like we have a great core of guys here. I think we brought in a couple of great pieces. I mean, I think we have a really good team, and health plays a big issue to that. But I think we put some good pieces in place here, and it's going to be really fun.
It was fun watching you play last year. You got off to that slow start, and you go down to Tacoma, and, man, for 12 games, I don't know what happened down there. It was some magic, you know, working with your guy down there and then coming back here working with Edgar and Scott Brosius. But all of a sudden, I see a totally different Mike Zunino. From the All-Star break on, you hit .280 in most of your home runs and most of your RBIs. You were absolutely phenomenal for a couple of months there in the second half of the season. What happened down there in Tacoma that turned you into the guy that we saw in the second half of the year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, through my career, I've had to make swing changes, but there was never the right whys and the right questions asked. And this one was really stripping the whole thing down and working from the ground up. And you know, narrowing my stance and incorporating a leg kick just really kept my direction and my timing. And, you mean, as the year went on, I became more comfortable with it and, you mean, stuck to my drills and stuck to everything that I did from Tacoma and just became more comfortable with it. And as that came and some of the success came, you know, the confidence grew and you sort of realize, you mean, what you can do at the plate. And then when you have that confidence as a hitter, it really makes a difference.
You say direction was an approach to driving the ball up the middle and the other way, because you had incredible power the other way when you take it that way.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing, was really focusing on right center. And it was just what I was doing mechanically wouldn't allow me to do that. I mean, my thought was always there, but I had to clean the mechanical side up to allow me to do that.
You have one of the toughest jobs in baseball, any catcher. You know, we've been blessed with some outstanding catchers, you know, in this organization, Dave Valley and Dan Wilson and now Mike Zunino. At spring training, you have more on your plate than anybody. What's it like for you to get in here into spring training, work with so many pitchers, a lot of guys you don't know? Of course, Fifi's here and James Paxton, Mike Leake, who you worked with last year. What's it like for a catcher at spring training? Besides, you got to take care of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, the days do get long. I mean, we're some of the first ones to show up here, but we need that extra time here to talk to all the pitchers. A lot of the times the conversations don't come on the baseball field. They come in the clubhouse or while we're having lunch or anything like that. But, you know, days are busy, and we're sort of bouncing around everywhere, and that's sort of part of the job title. But, you know, it's nice to do that, and then it's, you mean, that build-up to the season. We're trying to get our legs under us. We're trying to build up, you mean, for the long haul of 162 and then hopefully more. But, I mean, we just go and communicate with the pitchers best we can and just try to get on the same page with them.
Tell me a little bit about some of the guys. It's early in camp. Game started in a couple of days on Friday against the San Diego Padres. But let's talk about Felix Hernandez. What have you seen out of Felix here in the first few days of camp?
He came in looking really good. I mean, obviously, he started his throwing program a little bit earlier on pace and throwing more bullpens. But he's looking good. And I think no one questions Fee knows exactly what he needs to do to get back out there. I know the last couple of years have, bugged him a little bit with the injuries. But he's looking good. He's in great shape. And I'm just looking forward to get him into a game out there and really see what he's got.
James Paxton, I mean, what a year for Paxton last year, especially that run where you caught him in July, where he won seven in a row and he had like a 1.38 ERA. It was absolutely phenomenal. What are we going to see out of Paxton this year?
I think you're going to see more of that. I mean, he came in, another guy came in great shape. I know he's, really put time into to knowing his body, knowing what he needs to do to recover. And to me, it just shows. He's a true professional. He knows exactly what he wants to accomplish every day he comes to the field. And I think there's no lack of stuff there, but I think his preparation has really allowed him to have, you mean, the year he did last year.
A lot of young pitchers here in camp, some guys I'm getting to know here. I just got here, you know, yesterday. But who's opened your eyes here in the first few days as far as the newcomers here, especially the younger pitchers? I know Max Posey, very imposing figure at 6'8", 6'9".
I'll tell you what, I caught Marco Gonzalez in his first bullpen, and he looked really good. And obviously he was coming off TJ and a little bit of a shoulder scope, but I mean, he looked really good. He wasn't throwing the cutter last year. He took a year off that for his elbow, and he started throwing that, and man, it's a great pitch. And it's one of those where I think if he can throw like he did there, I mean, he's going to be a big piece for us in that rotation.
Tell me a little bit about overall the ball club, the changes during the course of the offseason. You're going to have D. Gordon out there in center field, Ryan Healy. Hopefully he's going to heal up real soon here. Juan Nicasio down to the bullpen and other guys as well. What do you think about this version of the 2018 Mariners?
I mean, I think we're going to be athletic. We're going to be athletic. We're going to be able to cover a lot of ground in the outfield. I mean, obviously, we have a very stout infield. If we can stay healthy on the mound, I think we have a really good shot of surprising some people. I mean, there's not many people writing us in there to make the playoffs or anything like that, but I think we're taking that mentality and, I mean, playing that underdog card.
Visiting with Mariners catcher Mike Zunino. Mike, we're going to let you go in a second, but rule changes this year. 6 visits to the mound for 9 innings, and catchers like to go out there and talk to your guy out there trying to help him through a rough patch. The infielders come in, the manager, of course, the pitching coach. How different is that going to be, especially for you when you want to go out there, but maybe the umpire is going to say, oh, you're down to 4 or 5. What are you going to do?
Well, this is conversations that we actually have. I mean, this is stuff that we really need to iron out before the season starts. I mean, I've talked to Skip. I've talked to, Stott, and just try to figure out, hey, do I need to look at you and, you know, sort of get the nod of this is a good time to go out there? But it's one of those things where our big thing is, I mean, 6 is quite a few amount of visits. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, if we have to go out that many times, I mean, because the pitching change doesn't count as that. So, you know, it's one of those where, I mean, if we can use them wisely, I think we'll be all right. But well, there's definitely going to be a little strategy behind it.
Well, young man, I think you're going to be poised for an outstanding season. Thank you so much for the visit, and have a great spring, buddy.
Awesome. Thanks, Rick.
Well, there it was. Great conversation. It's always fun to hear from Mike Zunino, but it's amazing. And we're going to talk about that more with our next guest coming up, about Mike Zunino and the kind of year he had. But it's amazing to look at the home runs, the extra base hits, the walks, which I think sometimes is overlooked, mm-hmm. some of it, just the quality of plate appearances we saw from Mike Zunino during the course of the season. And it was just so fun to watch that year develop and watch him develop. And I'm really excited about him this year.
Well, tell me what, you always were wondering, you know, what is he going to be when he gets back from Tacoma? You know, we saw him struggle in the early part of the year, and that was his story. I mean, you know, hitting under 200 for a couple of years and just over 200 one season. Was he going to be able to fix it? Man, did he ever, Shannon. He went down there, redid his stance, his swing, and he figured out how to fix things, and he really took off from that point on for the rest of the season. Was impressive.
And I think what was important was he didn't just figure out the swing, but he figured out his process, and it's something that he can go back to when he struggles. And he had that month of Junino, which is not for never, there's no more June. It will always be Junino. And then had a month, a down month after that. And I think it was just as important to see him have that struggle and pull out of that struggle. And he did. He had a very good August and September. And I think probably that, more than anything, probably gave him more confidence, just to know, you know, it wasn't here we go again, and I'm going to have to find something new. It was, I was struggling, I'm going to apply what I've learned in Tacoma and see what happens. And lo and behold, it got him back on a good path.
I was so impressed with his season last year for all the reasons you just pointed out. But for the other reasons we've talked about is the pitching staff. I mean, he dealt with so many different guys through the course of the season. It just felt like he was juggling so much last year. He's so good. He's one of the best catchers in the big leagues last year.
And that's why it's so tough, where you see a lot of catchers where they don't quite have the offensive numbers as other position players, obviously, because there's more on their plate. You know, they got to take care of that starting pitcher to see if they can get them deep into a ballgame and out of trouble, and then each and every reliever that comes into a ballgame. But to see a guy like Mike Zunino come in and go down to Tacoma, get that work in and get it done, it's hard. It is really difficult to fix things at the big league level. That's what this young man was trying to do year after year, and you know, he was able to do that last year.
He was, and I think his teammates just have the utmost respect for him for getting through that, for never putting his head down, never letting his struggles impact the rest of the team. And, Rick, it was funny. You know, we've had Mike Zunino here for how many years now? This is going to
this
be his fifth year. And, you know, at some point he moves past that young catcher, Mark. He's always had the leadership. At times it felt like he was acting it a little bit. I'm sure he's been the leader all along, but you really have seen him take it in the last year in particular. And somebody said, how would you compare him to a young Dan Wilson in that regard, and how he has everybody's, all of his pitchers back, and they know that, and how he communicates with them and takes on everything that he takes on in the leadership. And I'd never thought of it that way, but boy, you see a lot of that.
I remember seeing Mike 5 years ago when he was at Safeco Field with Everett, when he came up with that ball club, and he was standing on the sides there, and you know, he was a high draft pick, third pick overall that year, and eyes wide open. And now, you know, he's blossoming into this. It took a long time.
Yeah,
it took a lot of work because he got to the big leagues, you know, very, very early. But to see the young man put in the work, and then to see the fruits of that labor for anybody at this level, but especially for Mike Zunino, was outstanding.
And it takes, in general, longer for catchers, for the most part, to develop, especially offensively. With all the demands on catchers, I don't think it's a big surprise that it can take longer. I mean, the Buster Posies of the world are few and far between.
Right.
Catchers that come up and just sock the baseball around all over the place, it's a very short list of guys. It takes a while.
And he exceeded expectations last year.
Oh,
I think everybody just thought, oh, if he could just hit 225,
230,
hit his 25 bombs. He did better than that. He did better than that without the full season, and that was just kind of his first year of really finding that. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what his ceiling is.
Yeah.
We've seen so much good.
That's a great question.
You know, when Dan Wilson was around, Dan was so good behind the plate defensively that he gave Kazuhiro Sasaki the confidence to throw that splitter anytime in the count with a runner at third base. He gave Norm Charlton the confidence to throw that splitter anytime with a runner on at third base, anytime in the count. Mike Zunino, you know, has the confidence of his pitchers, knowing that, you know, you gotta stay down in the strike zone to get ground ball outs, to get people out. And he gives them the confidence to throw that pitch in that location with a runner on at third base. And, you know, to have that type of catcher behind home plate where you're not afraid to throw any pitch anytime is really outstanding and fun to watch.
No doubt. I mean, he calls a great game. I mean, he can block. He can frame. I mean, he's got all the tools that you want in a major league catcher. Great with a staff. I mean, all the intangible stuff is off the charts.
Then it's going to be interesting to find out this spring, over the next 4 or 5 weeks, who's going to back him up.
You That's know, one of the saw, battles we'll
We
do,
saw Mike
we'll
Martin come up last year and get his first major league hit. Then on the last day of the regular season, get his first major league home run down in Anaheim.
And you'll see David Freitas. Also down there. He's fun to watch. If you haven't seen him already, he is a very large and strong human being who takes a mighty hack at the ball. A lot of fun to watch in batting practice.
So a lot of competition there. So it was great to visit with Mike Zunino. And coming up here in the second hour of the Cactus League Report, we're going to visit with reporter Anthony Kastrovitz from MajorLeagueBaseball.com. Talking a lot of baseball with Anthony as the Cactus League Report continues from the Peoria Sports Complex right after this timeout.
All things Mariners, all off-season. The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And again, welcome back to the Cactus League Report, the second hour from the Peoria Sports Complex. Rick Riz along with Shannon Dreher and Gary Hill as well. And earlier, Gary had a chance to visit with MajorLeagueBaseball.com reporter Anthony Kastrovitz, and they start off an interesting conversation to talk about Anthony's all-underrated team, and he has a couple of Mariners on that ball club. Here's Anthony along with Gary.
Well, this is going to be a fun conversation. We get to sit down with MLB columnist Anthony Kastrovitz. You can find him on Twitter at Kastrovitz, and of course, also contributing to MLB Network, and you can find him online, MLB.com. Anthony, thanks for the visit. Fun times with the spring here.
Very fun times. You know, I've spent the last few days in Florida before I make my Arizona run, and idyllic weather and, you know, the optimism in the air. It's always a good time of year. Obviously a weird year with so many unsigned free agents, but, you know, finally I've seen some movement in that market. So that adds kind of a fun wrinkle to spring training as well, too, because you're standing in some of these clubhouses and wondering, okay, who's going to fill that empty locker tomorrow, because a deal could come down at any moment. It's certainly a changed way of doing business to where teams are willing to wait out and to wait for value. And, you know, I'd say in many cases they got it. You look at even the top end of the spectrum with these deals that went down recently, the last few days with Eric Hosmer and with J.D. Martinez. Obviously, those price tags, while high, and Hosmer got an 8-year contract, it's certainly not the price tag they went into the winter looking for. So, there's a lot of conversation to be had there between the union, between the league, and future negotiations. But CBA being what it is, has kind of driven it to this point. And teams being really analytically driven, they're much more cold-blooded, as it were, and just seeking value wherever they can find it.
Well, you've been producing a lot of content as of late, and one caught my eye especially, the all-underrated MLB team. So before we talk about some of the players involved, talk about how you went about it. What was your – how did you determine underrated?
Yeah. Well, and that's the hard part, right, because it's so subjective, right. And I try to make it as objective as possible. And it becomes a little bit harder. It gets a little trickier every year, especially if you don't want to have the same guys on it every year. But what I look for is, first of all, guys who have been around for at least a couple of years. So, you know, we're not talking about rookies, basically. So a couple of years of service time, at least, and, you know, haven't been an all-star yet is a criteria, or at least haven't been an all-star recently. And no guys with, you know, $100 million contracts or north of that. I find that to be a pretty decent barometer to where you get a pretty good list at the end of the day of guys who maybe don't get talked about as much as they should. And then you try not to lean too much to guys of small samples or guys just coming off, you know, a breakout year, although sometimes it just becomes too obvious not to do that. But that's my general gauge.
And in your catcher spot, you had a Mariner, Mike Zunino, who is probably the story of the year for the Mariners with what he did last year.
Yeah, I'm sure in Seattle it doesn't get overlooked. I think nationally it probably does. And, you know, we started to see that late in the 2016 season. And, of course, it didn't carry over in 2017. And he had that brief demotion, just to kind of work things out. But, yeah, it's a valuable asset, you know, a productive catcher. We know what a valuable asset that can be. We know that the Mariners, they had that core of young players they thought they were building around, and by and large, many of them, you know, did not pan out as planned. And it was easy to kind of put Zunino in that group for a while there, but to his credit, he stuck with it, and, you know, he's emerging as a productive, valuable player that he was envisioned to be.
And I can't imagine there'd be that much competition in that spot. It's just the offensive production from catcher. It's just not a long list in MLB right now.
Yeah, that's one of the trickier ones for sure. But, yeah, thankfully Zunino carried us this year, so that's good. And he might have to carry us next year as well. We'll see.
And you also had another Mariner on the list, which I thought was pretty interesting, Gene Segura at shortstop.
Yeah, so that's the one guy I kind of broke my rule for, the rule being the all-star rule, because he was an all-star 5 years ago, I think it was, with the Brewers. But I just, you know, a year ago I had Didi Gregorius on the list, and he still qualified, but I want to have some variety there. And I thought, I just think Segura is very well deserving because, for a couple of reasons. One, when they made that trade to Seattle, I think everybody kind of wondered, you know, how would that affect his offense? He was coming off kind of an aberration for him offensively in Arizona. So, okay, was that a one-year thing? Was he able to carry that over now, moving to Safeco Field, which we all know is not the offensive environment that Chase Field is? So that was a big adjustment for him. But, you know, to his credit, I still thought his offensive year was pretty good. He definitely took a dip in some numbers, but overall still very productive for that position especially. So, and then the other reason is just, we have so many great young shortstops in the game. I mean, Francisco Lindor, Carlos Correa, Corey Seager. So it's so easy to overlook a guy like Segura. It's probably hard now for him to crack the all-star roster in the American League with Correa and Lindor being a piece of that picture, and Bogarts for that matter. So at least he makes my list, if nothing else.
And you also had a local product on there from Tampa Bay, Steven Souza Jr., who not only fans appreciate because he's local, but he worked their way into their hearts with the Edgar Martinez comments over the offseason as well.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I love that because I'm very much pro Edgar for the Hall of Fame. So, yeah, for those who don't know, he called out Rays beat writer Mark Topkin for the Tampa Bay Times and called him out on Twitter for not voting for Edgar.
So that was all in good fun. But, I think that Souza is – he's one of those guys now that might be reading his small samples a little bit, but he did have, a nice surge last season. I just think he's a player who, there's still a lot in there, still a lot of untapped potential. Very athletic guy, a guy can help you, very good two-way player, can help you in every facet of the game. And I think we started to see that as last year progressed and, hope to see that more going forward.
Speaking of Edgar, history would suggest next year should be his year. Should Mariner fans be very confident that he will be in the Hall of Fame next year?
Yeah, you never know how these things are going to go, but certainly if history is any indication and the guys who get into that statistical terrain where he's gotten percentage-wise, and it being his last year on the ballot, that all those things kind of coalesce, and there's been kind of like Tim Raines, where there's been this internet movement in favor of Edgar Martinez, and in both cases, very deservingly so. So I think all those things are kind of coming together to make it a likelihood. You never say anything for certain in these matters, but boy, if he's not a Hall of Famer, I'm stunned, because anybody who wants to poo-poo the position, it's been around for north of 40 years. DH is a position. There are relievers in the Hall of Fame. There are DHs in the Hall of Fame. Frank Thomas is in the Hall of Fame. David Ortiz will be in the Hall of Fame. Edgar Martinez gets punished because of the position and because he kind of, he blossomed late. But I just think that the numbers are so overwhelming. And really, the best testament to Edgar Martinez's Hall of Fame case is what pitchers of his era say about him. And I'm talking about Hall of Fame pitchers. Mariano Rivera, Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, these guys all say this is the hitter they feared the most in his era. So that speaks to his worthiness.
Visiting with Anthony Castrovince from MLB.com. You can find him on Twitter at Castrovince. Anthony, I know you've followed Cleveland very closely through the years. I think this is a very interesting year for Cleveland. They've been so close the last couple of years. They've had a powerhouse team. You look at some of the free agents on the horizon. How big is this year for Cleveland if they want to get over the top?
I think it's absolutely huge. We know that in the smaller markets, your window can change dramatically in a hurry. And this is a team that has great offensive talent, but has really been built around its pitching staff. And, that health element can change in a hurry. So they've had great health the last couple of years and last year especially. And it hasn't led to that World Series. And then the big thing is pending free agency in the bullpen of Andrew Miller and Cody Allen. I mean, those guys were the reason they got through October the way they did in 2016. So with those guys nearing free agency, seeing the cost of – we were just talking about the free agent market, how much it's changed. Well, one thing that's changed is now the relievers came off the board right away at a high price tag. So that's one area teams are willing to spend, and I'm sure they'll be willing to spend it on Andrew Miller and Cody Allen, assuming they're healthy next winter. So this is a moment they have to capitalize on. This is their core. This is their group. Very strong in the bullpen still, and a lot of urgency to this 2018 season.
Mariners are excited about what their bullpen offers. Heading into camp, when you look at the Mariners from the outside, what's the biggest question mark in your mind about this team?
It's hard not to say the health of the starting staff, right, after what we saw last year. And sometimes the greatest predictor of future injury is past injury, or maybe they just have better luck this year, but one way or another, they need five healthy guys in that rotation, And chief among those is Felix Hernandez, of course. We know he's not going to be the King Felix he was, in the Cy Young days. But I still think, he's a guy who can find this stage of his career, make it work for him. Not terribly, unlike CC Sabathia, where he could still provide a lot of value with diminished stuff. And the diminished stuff is obviously a product of all the innings he's pitched in the big leagues, but just having him on the mound every fifth day would be huge because, 16 starts last year. And I think Jerry DePoto's even said, we're a different team if it's 25 starts from Felix as opposed to 16. So he's probably the biggest question mark within the question mark that is the rotation.
Are there a couple teams you're looking at that may surprise this year?
Yeah, there's a bunch just because we're in this environment where it's pretty top-heavy in terms of you can pick out the handful, six or seven teams that are like the elite teams in baseball right now. And then you got this hodgepodge of teams that, you got some rebuilders, you got some transition-type situations. And it's always hard to know, especially with the teams that are going with so many young players, and that can go either way, you know, kind of a high ceiling or a high floor. I look at a team like the Atlanta Braves or the Philadelphia Phillies, both in the NL East, where there's so much young talent. It's just a matter of when does it mature? Does it mature at the same time? I mean, you could tell me those teams win 60-some games. You could tell me they win 80-some games. I believe either way, just because, you know, that wide differentiation that you sometimes get with a young player, and they have so many of them all at once. So those are just some examples. And, I think it seems easy to pick the division winners right now in baseball, although that can always, you know, the minute you say that, you get proven wrong. But, you know, you feel pretty confident in the ability of, you know, pretty much across the board for these teams to repeat as division winners. But, you know, a year ago, it was hard to know if the Astros would live up to the hype, and they did. You know, it was hard to know. It was impossible to know the wild card picture would turn out the way it does. So there's always intrigue every year. And again, I just think the amount of young talent in today's game and the way teams have accelerated promotions of that young talent, and that plays into what we've seen this winter in free agency. It just makes things less predictable because youth is unpredictable, sometimes for the good, sometimes for the bad.
Well, Anthony, thanks so much for your time. I always enjoy your work. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll catch up in Arizona.
Thank you, Gary. I really appreciate that. And we'll see you soon.
And a visit with Anthony Castrovince, one of the great writers following Major League Baseball and a reporter for MajorLeagueBaseball.com. His visit with Gary Hill. I tell you what, I loved his all-underrated team to have Gene Segura on there along with Mike Zunino. Coming up next, more on the Cactus League Report from Peoria, Arizona, where spring training is underway. We'll be back right after this timeout.
Back to more of the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Well, baseball is back at Safeco Field beginning Thursday, March the 29th, with one of the biggest events of the year, opening night. Festivities include red carpet introductions, fireworks, and more. Great seats to opening night are still available at Mariners.com. And again, the Cactus League Report continues, and we're going to talk about our old friend Ron Fairley, who joined us in the broadcast booth for 14 years, working alongside Dave Niehaus all those wonderful seasons. And Red was on the Hot Stove League show last week talking about his new book. It's called Fairley at Bat. And, folks, if you want a great read, a lot of fun, great baseball stories, you want to laugh and find out a lot about his 50 years in Major League Baseball, you got to get this book. It's called Fairley at Bat by Ron Fairley, along with writer Steve Springer. You're going to love it. Here's part of that conversation with Ron Fairley that we aired last week.
Ron, we are so eager to talk to you about so many different things, but since we just heard that, I have to ask, what goes through your mind when you hear that highlight once again?
Well, that was pretty exciting. I mean, good golly. I mean, and there wasn't any doubt about the ball leaving the yard. I mean, when Junior hit it, I mean, it could have been 400 feet away and it would have cleared it easily. But, yeah, that was pretty good. I mean, hitting home runs in 8 consecutive games. And the thing I do remember that, then Junior came up again, I made Dave Niehaus have the call because I think if Junior would have hit it in 9 consecutive games, I think it should have been Dave Niehaus's call for it.
So are you saying that you actually, like, it was your scheduled inning and during the commercial?
Yes.
You said.
Yeah, when Junior came up the following game to hit home runs and to set the record, I made Dave Niehaus call his at bat. He wasn't going to do it, but I said, well, there's going to be a lot of dead air.
You mentioned Dave a moment ago. What was it like broadcasting with Dave Niehaus through the years?
Well, first of all, you have to understand, Dave loved the Mariners. I mean, he was 100% behind those guys. And the thing that was funny is that the things that Dave would say when he was off the air that I got a great big kick out of. But he was such a fan that he'd bring somebody in from the bullpen and we'll break for commercial time up and we'll be right back. And then Dave would say, "You God, oh my, why are they bringing that guy? I hadn't got anybody out." You know, and then come back on the air, and then, holy cow, here comes so-and-so. What a great job. You know, he'd go just the completely other way around. But he would, that would be one of the things. That and the other thing is Dave did not have a very good sense of direction. And in spring training, for an example, when we came out of Peoria there, the complex, if you go to the right when you leave our booth, you walk back into the press box. When the game was over, you go to the left to get on the elevators, go down, get in the parking lot, take off, and go wherever you're going to go for dinner. I always waited for Dave to leave the booth first, because about four or five times every spring, Dave would come out of the booth and he would go to the right, back into the press box, and I just let him go. And then I turn around and say, "Hey, Dave, this way." And then he always told me what I could go do to myself. And I got a kick out of that. And I love it. And Dave and I had a lot of fun together. We really did.
Big Red, Dan Wilson here. And I know.
Hi, Dan.
How are you?
I'm fine. How have you been?
Doing very well, thank you. And I know over the course of my career, I was lucky to hear probably a lot of the stories that are in the book kind of firsthand. And I know that stories in baseball get passed down, and we love that. But, you know, looking back, are some of your better stories as a player, or are they as a broadcaster? Where does it stack up in terms of your stories that you come across in the book?
Well, I think there's a little bit of a mix, and I think more of them you can attest to as a player.
Yeah.
I mean, I miss the clubhouse.
Yeah.
The banter that goes on in the clubhouse, and you know as well as I do what guys do on and off the field that you really get a good chuckle at. And if you've played on, it doesn't matter what major league team you played on, every one of them have stories. In fact, from the very beginning of baseball, there have been more characters that are involved in baseball, I think, than any other sport. They've been around longer, and I just think that there are more characters, and the more people find out about them, the more you're going to have some fun. In fact, when the Cubs became a professional team, they did that back in 1876. That was the same time that Custer was at the Little Bighorn. Yes. Kind of give you a baseball reference as to when the Cubs got. And we've had characters ever since then.
And they're relentless in that clubhouse.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, things that went on in the clubhouse and things were, some of the stuff was really good. And then sometimes it even transferred out onto the field. And an example is that Koufax was pitching, you know, whenever he pitched, we had a pitcher on our ball club by the name of Pete Rickard. And Pete was a left-handed pitcher and had pitched the major leagues for about 10 or 11 years, mostly with Baltimore. But when he was with the Dodgers, he was the long man in the bullpen. And the only time Pete would go out and have a few drinks would be the night before Koufax pitched. That Sandy was going to, you know, get knocked out in the second or third inning. Well, Pete went out this one afternoon, and lo and behold, Sandy got in trouble in the first inning, and they got Pete up in the bullpen, and Sandy got out of the inning. In the second inning, Sandy went back out to the mound, and he got in trouble again, and Alston got him up for the second time and went out to the mound. That day, I happened to be playing first base, and so when Alston got to the mound, there were three of us that are standing there. He had Alston, Koufax, and myself, and it was a hot day, temperature above 95 degrees, and Alston looked at Sandy, and he says, "How do you feel?" And Sandy says, "Better than the guy you have warming up." And that's when Alston just turned around and walked back on into the dugout. We eventually got hot. We scored some runs, and Sandy was the winning pitcher.
Ron Fairley's
but that never appeared. That never appeared in a box score or anything you read about the accounts of the game.
That's fantastic. Ron Fairley is our guest here on the Hot Stove. And Ron, can you describe for us, for those who have not had a chance to pick up your book quite yet, Fairley at Bat? Can you tell us and describe a little bit about this picture we see of you and Dave in a camera well, both wearing headsets, with the one differentiator that Dave was wearing a batting helmet with his headset?
Well, Dave says, "I can't do the game from down there without a helmet." And I said, "Why not?" He says, "If the ball comes over there, how am I going to get out of the way of it?" And I just said, "Why don't you duck?" You know? But I had to laugh at him. We did not have a screen in front of us. So, I mean, the fact that he wore a helmet, it just looked kind of funny as far as I was concerned.
That's terrific.
The other thing that Dave did, a couple of the post-game shows, they decided that they wanted us to be on camera. And so we had to turn and face the camera where the field was in the background. And Dave, in the process of putting on his jacket and putting his headset on and picking up the hand mic, he picked my microphone up. And so we did the post-game show, and I didn't say one word. Because Dave had my microphone.
Yeah, there he is, our good buddy Ron Fairley. And you got to get that book, Fairley at Bat. It's, I tell you what, it's a lot of fun, and it's an easy read. You're going to get through it in a hurry. Some great stories. 20 years as a player. He was an all-star at the age of 40 in 1977 with the expansion Toronto Blue Jays. He came up as a kid with the Dodgers in the late 1950s. What a career. 50 years in baseball, 30 years in the broadcast booth. Our thanks to Ron Fairley. That wraps up our Cactus League report. Rick Riz along with Shannon Dreher and Gary Hill as we get ready for our first broadcast of the spring on Friday afternoon when the Mariners take on the San Diego Padres right from this ballpark where we're broadcasting this evening, the Peoria Sports Complex. Hope you join us for all the play-by-play. And again, this reminder, baseball is back at Safeco Field beginning Thursday, March 29th with one of the biggest events of the year, opening night. Festivities include red carpet introductions, fireworks, and more. Great seats to opening night are still available at Mariners.com. What a night here in Peoria on the Cactus League Report. In the first hour, we visited with Mariner manager Scott Servais, also with new Mariners center fielder Dee Gordon. He makes that transformation from second base to center field. In the second hour, we visited with Mike Zunino and also Anthony Castrovince from Major League Baseball. com. That wraps it up from Peoria, Arizona. So long, everybody, as we get ready for our first game of the spring on Friday afternoon. Good night, everybody.